Hi all, welcome back to Verivox. This is interview number 5 with Simon Templar. We are going to be covering the next section, that is the second half of the letter from Aetna's council, so-called or allegedly, to the congregation from December 2019. And once again, we have Simon Templar with us, of course, to discuss this, and we will again be making some comparisons between the quote-unquote council's approach in communications about the string of events and their responsibility and their conduct to those of some of the bigger ministries who've had scandals and been accused of misconduct and mishandling of allegations of misconduct over the past couple of years. Sit back, relax, enjoy. Hope you get something out of it. Well, so last time I think we got through the first page of 3. Do you think we should run back through the beginning quickly or just pick it up from the top of the second page?
Well, I don't mind doing a little bit of a review because I printed off the letter again and just was kind of going through it. And, you know, as I read it, you know, it's been some weeks since I last read it, but as I read it again, you know, paragraph by paragraph, things jump out at me that are either misrepresentations, facts in error, distortions, things that are said to make the council look good or to support the decision, you know, to defend the decision that they made. It's just surprising how much of that there is, how much in each paragraph. And what is there on this first page? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraphs. Some of them are on the short side, but, you know, you can find fault with or question things almost in every paragraph.
Yeah, there's a lot there in spite of the fact that there's very little substance, there's a mm-hmm. lot of tells, and I guess we talked about that a lot because last time we were making some deliberate or overt connections between this letter and the documents that were being put out by Willow and Harvest about their mm-hmm. their two respective scandals and the breakdown that the, what was his name?
Yes,
Wade
Mullins.
Right? Yeah, we were talking about his breakdown of their propaganda and messaging
right.
in their official documentation and what relationship it did or didn't bear to the truth and what they were trying to achieve in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of his analysis or approach could be applied to this sort of thing, even though it's cover up on a much smaller scale.
Right. Yeah, things you do to make yourself look good, kind of, or preemptive strikes to head off any kind of question or scrutiny.
I think that's what's so interesting.
Paragraph, you know, mm-hmm. for us as council members, it has been an agonizing step, one that we actively tried to avoid taking. You know, that's the first short paragraph, and I could take issue with that right away. And or obvious question, well, what did you do to actively avoid taking it? What did that involve? I don't agree with that at all. But of course, maybe to reiterate what we said last time, this was supposed to be a joint venture.
This
letter,
according
to the termination mm-hmm. agreement, this is supposed to be a joint venture between the council and the pastor, creating yeah. this letter and communicating to provide information to the congregation about what happened. And that's not what they did. They just wrote it and sent it out, so I never saw it before it hit the mail. And, of course, that's one of the basic problems that you have. Just on the face of it, in any situation like this, that's the risk you run when both parties don't sign off on it. One of them thinks they know or they think they've got it handled, and they set forth information that's either not accurate or doesn't tell it quite the way the other person sees it. So that's why it's always wise to have both of them involved in it and both sign off on it, even under the best circumstances.
Yeah, you should, just for the sake of professionalism and to do the right thing by everybody and to decrease the risk of tension or friction later on. But they undermine their own credibility on that very point. You know, this was agonizing and we actively tried to avoid taking this step. They're trying to argue that they really care, but they flubbed even the writing of this letter, which is part of unofficial, I think legally binding contract, mm-hmm. right? The termination agreement mm-hmm. itself. Yeah. It's like, what?
Right.
In the very opening of the letter you're writing, which you shouldn't have written and shouldn't have published, you're talking about how much you care. But the act itself is negligence.
Exactly. This is something that it requires. It requires slowing down and really thinking it through. Because you can miss this if you're in a hurry. But yeah, they're trying to portray themselves as really sensitive and caring and conscientious and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an example, one example among several, in terms of the way they handled this, that they just steamroll. They just bulldoze. They just run you over. They don't slow down and get the other person's input.
Yep, they just rushed to get her done.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't even
yeah.
them.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even them rushing to put this out because they didn't write it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, I'm sure they were eager to put their stamp on it, but this wasn't even their effort to tick the boxes.
Mm-hmm. So here you are writing this letter on behalf of this church, which you really aren't supposed to be doing. And as we said, it wasn't done the way the contract or the termination agreement said. But in your crafting of this letter, you're very careful and very studious to portray the council as so caring and so invested in trying to do the right thing and being sensitive. And then as you do that, the other person feels like he's been run over because he didn't even have the consideration to see if he agreed with all this. But.
Much less let him know that it was going to be posted.
Mm-hmm.
There was no notice, much less consultation.
Sure. And what does that communicate? It communicates you really don't matter.
Yeah.
We're going to just do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then the next paragraph, many people wonder why we made this decision. There are many rumors. So much of this process is confidential. People can say a lot of things and make accusations.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put on there, that's a veiled accusation.
Yeah,
they're accusing.
That was my response, was this is a disguised accusation. Veiled accusation is better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a veiled accusation. Mm-hmm. People are saying things and making accusations because what? They're dishonest or they're slinging mud?
Yeah.
And what are they?
Yeah, but it
goes on to say, just by Christian policy, we cannot respond in detail. And I underlined just by Christian policy, and I wrote on there, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What Christian policy says you can't respond or explain what's going on?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's quite convenient that they can keep these supposed rumors. Well, they get to label them rumors or accusations. If they don't list them, then they can label them and dismiss them however they
right.
want.
Yeah, and the next paragraph talks about there's a lot of misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
In the next paragraph, the process has been long, starting in 2008. You know, that's not true. Council's been at work since early spring in these serious matters. That's not true. Not everyone agrees with the decision, but council was responding to a large number of deep, serious, long-standing. And then I just put next to that, padding the argument,
mm-hmm.
Adding these adjectives to make it look really serious.
Yep, altering the timeline and trying to redefine the nature of the issues. But at the same time, nothing is specified. Just puff, puff, puff.
Yeah, I guess to sum up, I could go down to the bottom paragraph. The bottom paragraph is the longest one on the page, and that's the one that talks about the financial package, the severance package. Council has taken great care to be generous to the pastor. Although it will exhaust our budget and will require massive financial assistance from the classes. You know, and I... You know, where do you start here? Are you trying to make yourself look good? We've taken great care to be generous. It will exhaust our budget.
Yeah.
It will require massive financial assistance.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my first reaction is, well, whose fault is that? You know?
Yeah, I remember saying something like that 4 years ago. Oh, this is such a burden. Well, you picked it. I mean, shouldn't you be... You're upbraiding yourselves for putting your church in this position, for putting your congregation or your classes on the hook for your mistakes. Well, not that they mm-hmm. acknowledge that it's a mistake, but maybe it would have been wiser to go the more usual route rather than firing this person, if it means mm-hmm. having to go these 10 extra miles, all of which you actually do specify. You don't do a bullet list for anything else that matters, but you're going to make sure everyone knows the sacrifices you've decided to make on severance and on health insurance and the housing and blah, blah, blah. I noticed today rereading it just how long it is, and you know, they really doth protest too much. You know, it almost seems like they're trying to convince themselves how nice they are, when really, you know, initially the push was to get you out of the parsonage by Christmas, well, by New Year's. That's who they really are. That's who they really are, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all this thoughtfulness. The thoughtfulness, if it had been natural, they wouldn't feel the need to trumpet it as a cover for their bad behavior. I just wanted to note really quickly, my printout must be different to yours because my first page only has 4 main paragraphs in addition to the opening sentence, and then my page 2 begins with the paragraph, "Nor was the council casual." I don't think we'd gone through that paragraph before the "we're so awesome, look at everything we've done to go beyond the denominational norm" paragraph.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I think our printouts are differently formatted. So we could revisit the "nor was the council casual about this decision" passage, because it's quite interesting, the claims they make about the supposed oversight and the procedural propriety of everything.
Yeah, well, let's just start with what the paragraph says in the first couple sentences. It says, "Nor was the council casual about this decision." Well, there's a protest in the beginning about how what they did wasn't hasty, or there's something I'm not recalling where that was in the document, but there's an argument against the notion that they made a hasty decision. But there was no discussion. There was no discussion with me in the council that my job was on the line, or that I was on probation, or that remember the list of suggestions or recommendations they had that I responded to, and I didn't agree to all of them. There was nothing that indicated that this was make or break. So there was no period, protracted period at all of discussion back and forth and where this could lead. It was all done. It all happened really fast.
Mm-hmm.
In a couple of weeks. So,
yep. And written notice was not given at any stage in the process. Which would not fly in secular employment situations.
Right. And of course we know that one of the council members, one of the three elders, had said that he wanted me gone. He told the other two elders that before my termination, at least, let's see, end of September, at least a month, well, five weeks before my termination, one of the elders told me that this guy wants you gone. He wants you gone. And then the other elder told me the same thing around that time period. So 5 to 6 weeks prior to my termination, they had told me that he wants me gone. But I didn't know that this was percolating in the council or that they were discussing this. And if they were actually thinking about doing it or wanting to part company with me, why wouldn't they just say, "Listen, we think that it may be time for a change. Why don't you think about taking another call? Why don't you see what's out there? See if you can catch on or take a call to another church. And let's give this 3 months, or let's give this 6 months." That's what they should have done. That would have been the fair or honorable or at least in the Christian context, the gracious thing to do. So
it would have been interesting to know at what point, I mean, this is water under the bridge, I guess, but it would have been interesting to know at what point 13 Bill had the ballast or the enough of the cards in his hand to make that happen. I mean, to get you gone.
Yeah, some of that goes back to the night they suspended me. Remember, they suspended me on October 27th, 2015. And that was the night that I responded to their list of recommendations, and we went through them one by one. Some I said I was willing, yeah, it's okay. A couple of them I said, well, they're all right, but not now. And then a couple of them I said, no, we can't do that. And then they exited me from the room, and they were going to discuss how they were going to react. and they said, you know, give us 15 minutes, and it took about 75. I remember because I was texting some people outside the building. I was texting them periodically, letting them know what was going on.
Yeah.
And so, like, every 10 or 15 minutes, I said, well, it's now been 20 minutes, it's now half an hour, it's now 45. And so 70, 75 minutes later, they brought me back in and said I was suspended, and then the following week, I was terminated.
Yeah, you wonder how much of that was him browbeating the others into submission. Well, browbeating or blandishing, depending on who it was, I suppose.
Yeah, but I think that that was in part why that meeting went on so long. I think that he had to persuade them of the necessity to suspend me. And then at the time of the suspension, see, then that was, from there we regroup, and then what do we do to get rid of him? I think that was his thought process. But see, what I was thinking the other day, I was reflecting on this a week or two ago, and I was just thinking of how underhanded it all was, given that this guy was supposed to be my friend.
Mm-hmm.
It's underhanded to conduct yourself that way and not be above board and say, you know, there's some feeling or there's some sentiment that we may have reached this point and we may be thinking about severing our relationship. You know, what do you think about that? We need to talk about that. There are different scenarios. One of them is you could see about getting another call. The fact that none of that was discussed with someone who's supposedly a friend just underscores how underhanded it was. And, of course, it was also secretive, too.
Yeah, well, the fact that you heard from the other elders, I don't know why they told you. Maybe they didn't think it was right to keep it a secret, or maybe they didn't think that it was told them in confidence. You know, they're sharing with you that Bill wanted you gone, but Bill never voiced that to you himself. And I wonder why he didn't have the guts to say that. And, maybe because if you'd gotten any notice, you might have tried to counter it or fight it, and he didn't want that because he'd made up his mind. He didn't think there was anything you could do to salvage it. Because he certainly didn't give you a chance to, they certainly didn't give you a chance to really respond meaningfully to the list, but it's not like they put much thought or prayer into that anyway. They made that up on the fly. So it didn't really deserve much in the way of serious consideration anyway. But of course, you know, we talked a week or two ago about your series on Philippians, you know, a very obvious an overt response to the complaints about the messages and the persistent theme of joy and how we need more joy. Like, okay, let's talk about it then. But that's not what they really wanted. And that's what became obvious when they cut that series off at the knees. At some point he must have decided that there wasn't going to be any kind of negotiation, no notice, no chance for you to either try to salvage the position there or stave off his bloodthirstiness. I don't know how else you put it.
Yeah, I don't mind at this point, and in this context, I don't mind speculating on why he did what he did. Because it was dishonest, it was sneaky, it was underhanded, it was not how you treat a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So my conclusion or my assessment of it is he wanted his way. There was an outcome that he wanted, and he was going to do what he thought he had to do to get his way.
Well, why did he need it so?
Tell me.
Yeah, I was just going to ask a question that probably we already know the answer to. Why did he need it to happen so fast? And I kind of already know the answer. Well, because he needed the credit, and that's more of an obvious victory for the naysayers than giving you the opportunity to find another call and waiting 3 months or 6 months and having a peaceful departure is much less dramatic than punishing you.
Right, and plus he was going to go off council after the first of the year.
Yeah.
So he would no longer have been part of the council.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the sentiments could have changed, and they might not have followed through, or yeah, they might have decided that that's not the route they want to go without him pushing it. But either which way, he had an outcome that he wanted,
mm-hmm.
and he was willing to do. He took the course of action that he thought was going to get his outcome because he wanted to get his way. And I realize that's an assertion and that's a charge against him. I believe that. I don't really think it was done with a view to what God wants or wanted. And if it was, he certainly didn't go about it the right way.
All right. Well, got lots of people who claim to do what's best for a ministry that God is blessing, but every step they take is unethical.
Yep. And so, yeah, getting back to that paragraph where it says, nor was the council casual about this decision. The next line says, every aspect of this deeply painful and worrying process. Yeah, more adjectives, right?
Yeah.
Deeply painful. I guess that's an adverb. Anyway, and wearying process was done in accord with the CRC church order. And that's not true either.
Which we know is not true, yep.
So I found that out months down the road, actually about a year ago, and I sent a letter to the current council of the church, and I informed them that according to the church order, any suspension of the minister of the word has to be done with the concurrence of the neighboring council, of the council of a neighboring church. And I believe the church order says the closest one.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a few sister churches up there that are just a few miles away from where I pastored, but the closest one would have been 3 miles up the road. And so according to the church order, they were obligated to go to their council, explain the situation to them, and the fact that they wanted to suspend me, and that council would have had to concur with their decision. Well, they never did that. They never spoke to them. Yep. And it was clear. I had an exchange of a couple emails. I sent a letter to the council, and the president of the council responded to me with a rather short, curt response, and then I went back at him because he didn't want to. I don't think he wanted to answer my question. Or let's see, there were two or three. I probably should have reviewed that, but whatever the case, in the end, he gave me the excuse that because they were going to terminate me, they didn't need to get the concurrence of another class.
It's not true.
Yeah, that's not what the church order says. So
it was interesting that at the time I made a note of this in my margin. We passed this over at the time. We didn't know some of these things about the church order. But the bigger point is, so did they. They make claims about everything they do being according to church order, and it's on them to do so because they were taking the aggressive action. But actually, it's not true. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, and of course, when you're in the middle of it and you're on the receiving end, and it's like a sneak attack, you're not expecting it, and so the shock of it happening is kind of a factor in how you respond and if you're thinking clearly or even considering checking out the church order or down that road. I mean, that never occurred to me, and my suspension was supposed to be 3 weeks. So I was kind of thinking, well, where's this all going to lead, and what am I going to do at the end of the 3 weeks, and where is this going, and how are we going to deal with this? And but before the week was up, I was called into another meeting, and they handed me the termination papers.
I mean, because at the time, you're fighting for your life, and it was so, it was such an emotionally and spiritually oppressive time. And the only thing that occurs to you at first is how illegitimate it is morally or biblically. And I suppose I didn't realize till after, but some of it occurred to me. I said, is this legal, like under federal or state employment law? But it never occurred to me to check the church order and see whether it was valid that way. I just kept thinking, this is wrong. This is evil and dishonest and self-serving.
Yeah.
So when that sort of thing is so in your face and bowling you over, yeah, it doesn't occur to you, gosh, they can't actually do this without checking with Prosperous Council. Who'd have thought that wasn't right?
Even the rationale for the suspension is a puzzler.
Oh, the
because
list?
Because they stood in front of the congregation and announced the whole council. Remember, they stood all up on the platform, all six council members, I guess as a show of unity, emphasis on show. They put on their show, and they said that I was suspended. And then, remember, a member of the congregation asked the question, and this guy was a judge. He's retired now, but he was a judge in Wexford County, and he asked the question on what ground?
Yeah. Quick, make something up.
Then it got pretty awkward, but there was supposedly a communication breakdown. So So then you have to wonder, is that really grounds for, well, is that even really what happened? Was there a communication breakdown? No. But even if there were, would that be grounds for suspension? But
yeah, so grounds, I guess, for discipline. Discipline? Official church discipline?
Mm-hmm.
Communication breakdown. Is that something you discipline someone for?
Yep, and I have to reiterate, or at least maybe underscore is a better word. I have to underscore that the suspension and the way that was framed was sneaky and underhanded, because it wasn't really a three-week suspension to regroup and clear our heads and decide how we're going to go forward.
No, it was to sweep you out of the way.
That was a smokescreen, a cover to get everybody together and scramble so we can get the Article 17 drawn up.
Yeah.
It was dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
So though the decision was ours, the process was watched over and advised by classes church visitors. Now that's nice to go back to the document after we said how it was dishonest and underhanded, that it was this mm-hmm. dishonest and underhanded process was watched over by classes church visitors, which doesn't speak highly of them. And in this scenario, I can't speak highly of, because they went the route of partisan supporters of this cabal mm-hmm. rather than mediating or trying to impartially observe and advise both parties.
Mm-hmm.
They chose not to do that. They chose to take sides. So yep. Bad on them.
Yep. And then they implicate other parties who didn't know jack shit about what was going on. The classes interim committee and pastor church relations, they just throw that in there again to puff their claims or to try to add bibliography. These people weren't involved. They didn't know.
Yeah, watched over and advised by classes church visitors, classes interim committee, and denomination's pastor church relations office. Well, where do you start? You know, the interim committee, who is that? Who does that consist of? The guy who functioned as the clerk of classes, who's perched in Marquette, which was 6 hours away, and whose incompetence as a classes clerk was such that they removed him from the position several months later. is that what we're saying? That you made a phone call to him? How did he advise you? Or the denomination's pastor church relations? How did he advise you? It makes it sound like there was this tremendous source of information coming from these people and a good deal of counsel, and that's not true at all.
The next sentence starts with this process. The process was intensely reviewed and then approved. Intense review, to me, is not only takes time, but there's a record of reviews. Where are the notes? Where is the communication
so
between people on all these steps of the process and the justification mm-hmm. for the council's actions? And where's the feedback and recommendations offered by all these professionals who are intensely reviewing this? None of this happened, but all of that was supposedly all took place on December 8th. How can you intensely review something like that in a one-off meeting when nobody even got the documentation more than a couple of days in advance?
Right. Now you're talking about the classes meeting
mm-hmm.
and how the classes and the synodical deputies approved it.
Yeah.
But they didn't have time to review the documents, and I have serious doubts as to how many were really up to speed about what was happening, since they only got the documents Saturday morning and the meeting was Tuesday evening.
Right, well, on the huge
and
bulk
were,
of...
there were very long documents to read through as well.
Mm-hmm. On the bulk of it was Keith Maness's prejudicial mess, so...
Yeah, exactly. But I can't help but say... I can't help but say, knowing who wrote, even being aware of who wrote this letter, and that I am, in fact, impugning him, I can't help but say that this paragraph is a distortion. To say the process was watched over and advised by classes, visitors, interim committee, pastor church relations, that distorts the picture. What it was is, this is what we want to do, this is what we have in mind, according to the church order, we see that we have the right to terminate him based on X, Y, Z, is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other person on the other end of the phone says, yeah, that sounds all right. this paints a picture of them getting advice, discussing it, trying to get their input, trying to solicit feedback. I don't think that happened, because so many times when I've talked to people at the denominational level or even fellow pastors at a classical level, every one of them says, why did this happen so fast? Why did they handle this? So many questions are raised, and sometimes outright criticisms are leveled at this process. So that just puts the lie to what's asserted in this paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people you did hear from quite openly, if unwittingly, revealed their bias and is misinformedness a word? So that doesn't inspire confidence with all these claims of all these people working really hard and being in touch and all the being extensive review. Everyone you heard from outside of the congregation, I mean, in the classes, some of them were just rude, which showed that they were being fed biased information and that it affected their treatment of you, which isn't Christian. But yeah, they were misinformed. It's like, I don't want these people intensely, but they didn't intensely review anything. There was gossip over the course of a couple of weeks, but there was never any time to do this the right way. So how can you claim it was done the extra right way?
Well, how can you claim to have done your job well or provided proper advice when you didn't talk to the pastor who was in the middle of it? Think about that one. And of course, here's the last line of this paragraph says this, quote, as awful it has been to go through this, the council has sought to do its work humbly before God with unanimous conviction, with honesty and integrity. What's the old saying? Don't break your arm patting yourself on the back.
I mean, the unanimous conviction is just propaganda. I think in my memory, I thought he'd used the term unanimous more in the letter than I think he did. I think I only found it twice. Mm-hmm. But still, that's supposed to be, it's a pretty strong assertion, but he means for people to believe it. Though with honesty and integrity struck me as something weird to tack on. Why would you need to claim that?
No, they didn't do that.
As a group of elders. Yeah.
It wasn't honest. It wasn't open. It wasn't in with integrity. You don't suspend somebody and say, you're suspended from pulpit duties for 3 weeks, and then hurriedly get together in secret meetings to facilitate the firing process and get that done in a week.
It's just interesting that he felt he needed to include that.
Well, he didn't even have the integrity to sign his name to this document.
To
the Article 17 document.
Right. Right. Well, it is funny that he mentions himself in the third person with no disclosure that he's the author when he writes the sentence before, though the decision was ours, the process was watched over and advised by classes, church visitors, meaning me! But he doesn't acknowledge that.
Right. Yeah, he wasn't honest with me in the process as this unfolded, because I had correspondence with him or tried to have correspondence with him in the days leading up to the classes meeting where they approved, that's the word, where they approved my Article 17.
Mm-hmm.
His interactions with me lacked honesty and integrity.
Yeah.
If I can say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So shall we push on to the next paragraph?
Oh, yeah. I guess we've already touched on quite a bit of it, but yeah. So what have we got?
It's the one where he talks about the severance package.
Yeah.
And as you already mentioned, about the second or third line says, provisions for use of the parsonage have been extended to January 31st.
How charitable.
Well, okay, here's the problem with that. Initially, the termination agreement said I had to be out by the end of December.
Uh-huh. That's less than a 30-day notice, which is standard even on rolling month-to-month leases.
Yeah, so this is about pathetic. 3 weeks after the classes meeting.
So disgusting. Yeah, sorry.
So how do you ask somebody to move out, to be moved out, and then you got to find the place that you're going to go, right?
Yeah, which up in the middle of nowhere.
Christmas is the week before.
Yeah.
That was bad. What you call bad optics.
Mm-hmm. It was callous.
And there were people in the church that were miffed about that. One of them was a young guy who said, you're going to make this guy move. He's missing a leg. He's got a prosthetic leg because he had his leg amputated, and you're going to make him move 3 weeks after this meeting in the winter, the week after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what are you nitwits thinking?
They're not, though. It was, for some people, it was callous. For others, just stupid.
Mm-hmm. But this is another indication of how they do their work humbly before God with honesty and integrity, and they agonize over their mm-hmm. decisions. And
painstaking.
It's an awful thing, and they have to go through it, and mm-hmm. it was just what they had to do, and you just have to understand how we agonized over this, and blah, blah, blah.
Yep. All these arrangements are, by every outside estimation, above and beyond the norm. Mm-hmm. The council made the arrangements for no other reason than the care of the pastor and his family.
Right,
but
now,
we won't be making a New Year's with you living in the parsonage, even though it'll sit empty for 3 years.
In a sane world where people talk to each other and they're professing Christians, in a sane world, wouldn't you go to the person and say, this is what we're thinking, this is kind of what happens under these circumstances. What are you thinking? How long do you think you'll need to get packed and to get out of here? What do you think is reasonable?
No.
In a sane world, there would be some kind of negotiation, some kind of reasonable negotiation process.
Yeah, but what had happened was all of them had already been so successfully... there's a word for this. I forget. But in their minds and in the little places in their hearts where they're able to empathize, you'd already been depersoned.
Mm-hmm.
You'd already been made sort of a thing or an inconvenience or an enemy. The fact that you were a human with needs and somebody who was owed just justice, bare justice, mm-hmm. and fair consideration, that was no longer part of their operation.
Also, you have to add to this, when you're talking about a pastor moving out of a parsonage, you have to bear in mind that this is not a typical rental situation. So if I'm sitting in this apartment and I'm not paying rent and I'm not getting out, then I'm costing the landlord money.
Right.
Now, sometimes there are mitigating circumstances, and that's why the law doesn't kick them out, right?
Right, you have
that's
to.
That's why, according to the law, you know, it's harder in some states to evict people mm-hmm. than it is in others. However,
you have to go to housing
every
court.
Every month that you sit there, it's an injustice to the landlord if you're supposed to get out and you can't pay your rent. However, in this situation, they're not going to rent it. The stupid thing is going to sit. It's going to sit empty.
Yep.
Now, most people know, too, that houses do better when someone's living in them to take care of them.
Right.
This case, the parsonage has been empty for how long now?
Well, it'll be 4 years in February, right?
Right.
Oh, that's a long time.
So, now they have had an interim in there over the last number of months. However, the drive to get somebody out of the parsonage, it's a fair question to ask for what? Why do you want him out of there? Well, because you don't want to see him there, or you don't want to see him
right.
coming
you're,
and going?
You're too visible.
Is that what the problem is?
Well, you have to both be not visible and probably for the sake of their consciences, but also they don't want you accessible to congregants who might be asking questions. They want as quick and as thorough a sever as possible.
Yeah, we can speculate about what their motivations were.
Mm-hmm.
But again, going back to how we began this discussion, in a sane world, especially with professing Christians, and knowing it's the dead of winter, and knowing that the guy's an amputee, why wouldn't you say, let's shoot for March or April? Let's shoot for spring. The weather breaks, maybe late March, early April. Let's shoot for then to get you out of here. Why wouldn't you do that? And you got a lot more sane chance of, a lot better chance of getting an idea of where you want to move to and getting things packed in a more orderly, reasonable fashion instead of, in essence, making somebody move twice. Mm-hmm. Of course, when you add to that they gave me money for housing to the end of June.
Yeah.
And that was a $700 housing allowance. Now, they talk about the massive financial assistance and, and exhausting the budget and all of that and tapping into the classes and, oh, how onerous. But yet they're going to give you $700 a month to pay rent somewhere.
Right.
For 6 months. And what is that, $4,200?
Yeah, they were very casual with other people's money. That was really, you know, irresponsible. It was bad stewardship.
Yeah. You're giving this guy thousands of dollars just so you can get him out of the parsonage.
Well, because ideally, well, at least it seems so, it was all lacking in compassion and all this stuff that they're so steeped in. But the ideal certainly would seem to be that you just disappear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it cost them $700 a month, mm-hmm. every month I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And the dumb thing sits anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, anyway, just, I guess, to cut to the end of this paragraph. It says all of these arrangements are, by every outside estimation, above and beyond the norm. Well, that's not true either. The standard for severance pay in the real world is one month for every year served.
Mm-hmm.
So I should have gotten 8 months of severance, not six.
Well, but reality doesn't matter. Keith just makes the assertion.
Yep.
And puffs it again by saying, by every outside estimation. Not like you would know, Keith.
I doodled this. You know how I said I put comments,
mm-hmm.
By some of these lines, some of these paragraphs, but I put in this one, I put, none of this is compensation for jeopardizing someone's career.
But he never got that. He never took that seriously.
Impairing or damaging someone's career. What you did with your housing allowance and severance package for an extra couple months, none of that compensates for impairing or damaging someone's career or reputation.
Well, but none of this was supposed to be about compensating you. It was about making themselves feel better, or perhaps more importantly, making themselves look good.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there was, I don't think there was even a thought that this could seriously hinder this guy from moving on, dealing with it this way.
Yeah.
That didn't matter. Somebody getting his way, that's what really matters. I may be so bold.
Yeah, and other people...
So we go to the... What's that?
Other people who weren't strong enough to stand up to him, either out of ignorance or out of the need to mitigate it, the damage to themselves, minimized the harm in their own minds. Well, surely you could just go do something else. You know, you'd make a great teacher.
Yeah, he stampeded them, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, they had no idea. Well... Yeah, shall we move on to their real oops moment? Uh-oh.
What the?
The next one is so...
Go ahead. I'll let you have the floor on this one, the next paragraph.
The next paragraph is so so desperate. The council knew very clearly with painful awareness that by making this decision, some people would leave Aetna Church. Gosh, that's not what I heard. We heard that the guarantee was that people would leave if they let you stick around. And there was no... All the people that I talked to, I bet if I'd asked them this question, I mean, I can't guarantee this, but the sense I got was you had to go because people were surely going to leave if you didn't. And that was the main reason why some of them were carried along with it. They were desperate for the church to survive, and they believed they couldn't afford to lose any more members. That was the deciding factor, or the most important one, was this church has to survive, and it can't if it loses any more people, and we are going to lose more people if we don't get rid of the pastor. They didn't know, they didn't have any kind of awareness, painful or otherwise, that people were going to leave as a result of this decision. They thought people would support and stick it out, especially if they could keep them in the dark about how this happened. So that is just a bald-faced lie.
So you're convinced that they didn't expect people to leave. They didn't expect the kind of exodus they had.
Well, the decision wouldn't have been stated as so clear-cut if either way could lead to people leaving. Or that
right.
This says that they knew that some people would, not could or might, would. They're trying to claim like this that this reaction was expected, and it wasn't. Or
yeah,
at least
that's true, right?
Not in the same way that it was assured to them if you stayed.
Yeah, this is one of those paragraphs, and if you're looking at it on the page, which people listening to this wouldn't be able to see, maybe you could post it on your
It is, but I'm not sure. I think that it's in PDF format, so I think it may be more like mine than yours, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, this is a very short paragraph. It's only three lines on my page,
mm-hmm.
but there's so many ways you can attack this.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways you can critique this. Just first of all, let's start with the words. The council knew very clearly with painful awareness. That, I'll just draw attention to that, and I won't comment. I'll just draw attention to that with painful awareness. But yeah, by making this decision that some people would leave at the church. But if we continued going as we were, there was no hope for the survival of our congregation. Okay. Couple things. Some people would leave if we make this decision. But the reason that we're making the decision is because if we don't, some people are going to leave.
Right.
So what are we doing? Are we picking our poison?
But see, that's not the way it was pitched to the elders who spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
They had no sense that people are even likely to leave if you got terminated. Whereas there was a sure thing that other people, the extortionists, would.
And my rejoinder to that is, let's see, we've got committed people who aren't causing problems, aren't trying to extort the church, but if you do this, they will think it's unjust and they'll leave.
Mm-hmm.
So do we pander to them, or do we pander to extortionists who, I don't want to hear messages that convict me or that point out the terrible sin in the lifestyles of my son or daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to pander to them?
Right.
In some churches, if you threaten the church because you don't like what's being preached because it's biblical, they just might tell you, don't let the door hit you on the way out. So that's a fair question. Who are we going to pander to or cater to here?
Mm-hmm.
The last phrase, no hope for the survival of our congregation. Well, is that what this is about?
That's what some people thought. But it's not a non sequitur. It's just that the last sentence, people believed that was true. But that was because they didn't believe the first one, the first sentence. Well, that's not what I mean to say. They thought that terminating you was key to the survival of the church because that was the only way they were going to keep people. They thought it would help assure the survival getting rid of you because they didn't think that getting rid of you would endanger their numbers further.
Mm-hmm.
So actually the two sentences are at odds.
Well, you mentioned you used the term non sequitur. What I want to camp on at the end of this paragraph is that the goal is the survival of the congregation. That's the concern. Okay. But does that mean you play dirty pool to ensure that?
Yeah, well, I think some of them, there's a couple of presumptions or presuppositions that you have to take apart. Would they have acknowledged that it was dirty pool? And
mm-hmm.
are they assuming that the church continuing to exist is automatically a good thing? Or does a church actually have to meet some God-honoring standard before it's worthy to fight for or try to keep open? They assume that the church full of non-Christian whiners is a good thing because it's still there. Not that they would acknowledge that they're ungodly whiners. You know, they probably assume that everyone in the pews is a believer.
No, that point is well taken, and I think you get my point as well, that, okay, you want your church to survive, you want you're aiming for the survival of the congregation,
mm-hmm.
which is understandable. In fact, in one of the judge's write-ups, he mentioned that or made reference to that he didn't want to see the church fail to survive. He wanted to see the church go on, even though it was a small country church.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, where do you draw the line in terms of what you do to help it survive?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Dirty pool, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Lie, cheat, steal.
Mm-hmm. You don't do unethical or immoral things to try to ensure the survival of the church.
Well,
you try to be faithful and trust God, and if it's time to close, it's time to close for whatever purposes the Lord has. But you can't just say, we're going to do whatever it takes to help this church survive. And of course, I don't want to put words in their mouth. I mean, I'm sure most of the members of the council wouldn't have said that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't cut corners and do underhanded things because your motive is the survival of the congregation. So now here we are, almost four years later, and where are they?
You'd assume they're not in a better place if they're vacant, even if the doors are still open. But once you accept cutting corners, try to ensure the survival of your ministry. The bigger the stakes, the bigger the corners, I guess, or the bigger the moral compromises. Like we see in all the big denominations or the big groups with their big scandals. Well, surely we don't want the image of this ministry to be branded or diminished because God's doing something here. So, well, this pastor, you know, he took advantage of this woman. Or at our private school here, teenage boys were being abused. But, you know, surely we're doing so much good. We can't let this get out.
Right.
Doesn't work that way.
You know, it's one of those expressions that we take from the corporate world. What's it, too big to fail?
Yep.
So should we go to the next paragraph?
Yeah.
I would highlight the paragraph, not the next paragraph, with this letter we've sought to carefully, appropriately address your concerns.
Yeah, that's a bunch of baloney.
Calling for all, I don't really have a lot to say about that. The future is uncertain, blah, blah. The second paragraph down says, we ask for your trust and support.
Mm-hmm.
None of us as a council wanted this.
It's an interesting qualifier, as a council.
That's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
None of us wanted this. That's a lie.
Yep.
I know for a fact that one of them did want that.
Yep.
Next comment is, or statement is, we tried to avoid it.
No, you didn't, because then it wouldn't have happened.
You did, huh?
It was all on you. Yeah. You forced their hand? How?
We tried to, so you worked from sun up till sundown to avoid it? What do you mean you tried to avoid it? How much energy did you expend? We have grieved over it. Not in front of me, you haven't.
No.
We've tried to be truthful and reasonable. What does that mean? You were the reasonable ones and I wasn't. In the end, however, we had unanimous belief that this decision was right. That's not true either. You deceive yourselves.
Yep.
One of the elders who was part of this left the church immediately after his term of office was up because he didn't agree with it and was coerced into going along with it. Now, you can ask why that happened or why he allowed that to happen, but that gives you some insights into the dynamics of that council room and one very strong-willed, unethical elder who tried to get people to do it his way.
Mm-hmm.
Did people really feel at liberty to disagree with him?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, do we? But we do know that it wasn't unanimous. There were people who went along who didn't agree but felt like they couldn't express their belief, their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Gee, I don't know.
It's interesting they have to reassert the unanimity. I think more than anything else to try to stem any questions.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's not the right way to put it, but we all believe this was the right thing, so you can rest easy. You don't have to think about it. And we don't want you to, and we don't want you to ask or speculate.
Yeah, you don't want them to doubt when you send this letter out. You don't want them to doubt your decision or to question it. You know, if this was a 60-40 vote, well, that wouldn't look too good, would it?
No.
Mm-hmm. So next paragraph, should we go to that?
Yeah.
Not much left. Now we're getting close to the finish line here.
But there's a lot in this second to last one.
You think that this one's kind of loaded, huh? We call upon the congregation of blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
to an attitude of cheerfulness and faithfulness before our Lord. You must be talking about the next line, right?
No, I think even the first one, the writer, he's making it a heart issue if you have reservations, I think is what's going on there.
Well, I've got a comment on that line, on that exhortation, and the last exhortation in the paragraph. But between that,
mm-hmm.
between that, there's this statement which says there has been a lot of loose accusations, discouragement, and rumor thrown around against us as a congregation.
That's a Keith Manis blue ribbon sentence.
A lot of loose accusations. Okay, I don't know, cynic in me is peeking out here, but I want to say, now you know how it feels, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, no details.
You know, I could say the same thing about me. There was a lot of loose accusation,
mm-hmm.
discouragement, and rumor thrown around about me.
Uh-huh. But how
was
do
I
you...
allowed to address it?
How do you throw discouragement around against somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you throw an accusation around against somebody? Yes, I suppose. Rumor? Not sure. But what's interesting is that he assimilates the congregation to the council, or assimilates the council to the congregation. Who's been accusing the whole congregation, or trying to discourage the whole congregation? No, you made the decision, and you foisted it on the congregation.
Right. The loose accusation, to the extent that there was any, or that that's even an accurate description, the loose accusation and rumor was against the council.
Yep.
And their, what I have to say again, was their hasty and unwise decision. And of course, then you want to ask, well, what accusations? Yep. Which ones were loose and which ones were accurate?
Well, they wouldn't want to encourage speculation or repetition by spelling them out.
This has been hard on the good reputation of our church.
Oh, I love that. This good and godly church.
We can only move forward. We can only now move forward. I was always a little unclear about the word choice there and why he phrased it that way. We can only now move forward, or now we can only move forward.
I think he means now we can only move forward, but
shoulder to shoulder, with grace, dignity, and optimism, in accord with 1 Peter 3:18. So, like I said, I was reserving my comment about the first line, which says we call upon the congregation to an attitude of cheerfulness and faithfulness. And then this last one, move forward, shoulder to shoulder, grace, dignity, and optimism. Why didn't we do that 6 months ago?
I was just going to say.
Why didn't we call upon the disgruntled, the complainers? Why didn't we come up with this exhortation several months before?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair question?
Hmm. Yeah, is he asking people to do something? Because I didn't think they liked that.
You didn't think that they liked being asked or exhorted to do things?
Yeah, especially if it had to do with, you know, changing their attitudes or adopting certain healthier attitudes.
So now that we've done the termination, now that we've got that behind us, now let's move forward and work shoulder to shoulder with grace and dignity and optimism and have an attitude of cheerfulness and faithfulness. Let's do that now. Now, where was all this before?
Yeah.
Like I said, the cynic in me is peeking out. Sorry about that. Well, last paragraph.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready to move on, or was there another comment you had about this one that we were just on?
No, that's fine. Yep.
Wait. You're the interviewer. I'm just the interviewee.
I'm just still stunned by some of his odd turns of phrase. Rumor thrown around against us.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, things that are thrown out there but never defined. Does Aetna have a good reputation? You're asserting this, but you're not even a member. You're not a member of Aetna. This is all an assumed identity, an appropriated identity to write this letter.
Well, sure. I mean, that's an assessment. That's a value judgment on his part.
Mm-hmm.
The good reputation of our church. We appreciate your diagnosis, sir, but based on what?
Mm-hmm.
It may be true or not, but based on what?
Well, this is manipulative. This is encouraging people to get defensive, and that will cause them to pull together. Oh, people are attacking us or doing things that are going to make us look bad. They're attacking our reputation, so we need to step up.
Yeah, but as you know, he pastored in a church. The guy who wrote this, how could we say this? Posing as a member of the council. Posing, right. That's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who wrote this, posing as a member of the council and not having had the integrity to sign his name to it, but he pastored a church a half hour away in another county.
Right.
What does he know about the reputation of the church? And of course, I took this up with him several weeks before he kicked this letter out, because he stood up in front of the classes in a classes meeting and talked about what a good and godly church it was. And I called him on that in a letter, and I said that may or may not be true, but you don't know that, and you're prejudicing the delegates of the classes. That's really inappropriate for you to say that. I pointed that out to him, but he never responded.
He was schmoozing.
Mm-hmm.
And this,
that's not right.
This, I think, is calculated to get a defensive reaction out of people.
Mm-hmm.
Or, give a little shot in the arm to community spirit.
Right, and who knows, you know, there may have been additional motivators
mm-hmm.
besides that, but either which way, it's wrong to do that.
Yeah.
flatter somebody or to curry favor and to make those kind of statements when you don't know what you're talking about. That's wrong.
Yeah.
Even if it's true. What he said at that classes meeting may have been true, but he didn't know that. So I'm not going to back off on that when it's not right.
Yeah, so. Well, this whole experience has made me very wary of people who compliment too much or too readily. Anyway, we can move on through this difficult and awkward time.
Right. Did you want to tackle this one?
No, I wouldn't have been invited, so I think my reaction to this might have been somewhat different to yours. And
I meant, should we read it? Should we read the final paragraph?
Okay.
Finally, here it is. Finally, and I quote, "Although this is a difficult and awkward time, we desire to express and share Christian grace. The council is tentatively planning a farewell open house for Pastor T on Sunday afternoon, January 3rd, blah, blah, here at church. Thank you, the council."
Thank you with a hyphen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go first or shall I?
I don't really know what more to say except for the desire to express and share Christian grace makes you sound like a criminal or some sort of black sheep.
Go ahead, take your time.
Yeah, black sheep. And it's funny that they do have to say tentatively planning, since they're announcing this in this letter without having consulted you about it, or your daughter
right.
who still lives with you.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
This is a big, red, flashing, neon sign that says, of course, I speak figuratively, that says, we don't get it. When I got this letter, in fact, I remember showing this to a relative who had come over for dinner not too long after this letter was sent out.
Uh-huh.
In fact, there was a group of us around the table, and the relative looked at that line, put her glasses on and read it, took her glasses off and read it again, got up, walked around the room, ran her hand through her hair, and I almost hit herself over the head and said, "You have got to be kidding me."
Mm-hmm.
After what they did, how can you talk about this desire to share Christian grace and then having an open house?
Yeah.
Like I said, this is a flashing red neon sign. Picture something in the order of a big one in Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
We don't get it. We don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
How clueless can you get?
Yeah.
You just railroaded this guy out the door. You slandered him.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't give him his day in court. Did was all sneaky and underhanded. Even the elder who left said this was a railroad job. And now we want to have an open house.
Someone you can't wait to be rid of. and yeah, sullied his name on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't help yourself because you got mad. Yeah, weird, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Total obliviousness.
Yeah, a total disconnect. So again, like I said, we don't get it, but this total disconnect between what you think you did and how you feel like, well, you're the counsel, and he reports to you, he answers to you, he's an employee, and if you want to fire him, you have the right to do that, and so you think you didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea how he feels, how his family feels, how this looks to outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And how even people in the church that you supposedly serve, how they assess this. Some of them very indignant, very angry, firmly convinced that it was unjust. And like I said, to use the elder who left, a railroad job.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, total disconnect. You don't even know what you did. You don't even think you did anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
How obtuse.
Well, except that I think the writer of the letter, well... No, I take that back. I'd have to think about that. I was going to say, I think he knew or understood more than the average council member did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's more sophisticated. But I'd have to think about that before I swore to it.
Yeah, I guess to elaborate on this a bit more, even though we've covered that short little paragraph pretty well, if that's what they really think and they truly don't get it, it is yet another testimony to the fallen human being's ability to rationalize and to convince yourself or to be deceived.
Yeah.
Or a combination of those things.
Mm-hmm. And a lack of
empathy.
lack of empathy, and an inability to apply biblical principles to your actions with any kind of conviction.
It's interesting, speaking of this last paragraph, it's interesting that the day this letter went in the mail, which I believe was, no, I take that back, the day that this was received by recipients in the congregation, the day that this was received, I met with two of the deacons at the meeting house. Two of the deacons came by for me to sign the termination agreement.
Yep.
Termination agreement said that the congregation and I would write this very letter. Well, it's ironic that the day they came over for me to sign it was the day that this letter showed up in people's mailboxes. So it had been mailed out either the day before or 2 days before mm-hmm. they met with me. And of course, I had no idea that they drafted this letter, or I should say that the church visitor wrote this on behalf of the council and didn't sign it.
Yeah, their ghostwriter.
Right. So this had been drafted, written up, and then sent out 2 days earlier, and then it was in people's mailboxes the day that they came by for me to sign it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking me when they came by and I signed the termination agreement, they mentioned this dinner, this open house, and they were saying what date it was and so forth. And I just told them no, because they were asking me about the menu and what I might like, and I said no. I don't want to do that. I'm not interested.
Really?
Yep. And they were both, the word is taken aback, but you could tell by their expressions that they were surprised. There was an awkward silence, like they weren't expecting me to say, no, I don't want a dinner and I'm not going to do this.
Well, do most terminated employees get that kind of treatment? That's something you do when somebody retires or after having been with a company for 25 years, you know, they're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a farewell, it's a sort of honorary thing. Why would you honor somebody you had to discipline for a communication breakdown who was mm-hmm. making people feel sad all the time?
Right, well, there's that, but also it's another evidence of the disconnect
yeah.
of the flashing red neon sign, we don't get it.
Yeah.
The disconnect, see? And I wasn't going to go along with it. You know, not only would it have been hypocritical, but what they did was wrong, and I wasn't about to just pretend and sweep all this under the rug. I wanted to send a message. I wanted mm-hmm. to make a statement that I felt like this was handled badly, that I was mistreated, and worse, actually worse than that, but I won't elaborate on that. I won't try to come up with the descriptive, but yeah, I wanted to make a statement that I thought what they did was wrong, and so therefore I didn't want this farewell open house. It wasn't right.
Dense.
Like I said, they both had a very surprised look. It was, there was an awkward silence, but I told them, no, I'm going to do it.
God save us all from that kind of cluelessness. Well, does that wrap up the letter?
That's the end of it.
Yep.
The only thing left after that is thank-you, Council of Blank CRC.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He gave himself away because he's a hyphen lover. He's the only person, the only person I've come across who does that thank you in that way. Well, at least consistently. I've seen other people do it, but yeah, that's his for sure. It's his signature.
Painful awareness and those little things. Loose accusations. Rumor thrown around against us. Those are little tells, too, once you get to know the writing style.
Yeah, he does tend a bit toward the purple end of things. Well, maybe
but
next
boy, they're,
time.
They're,
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, boy, there sure is a lot of self-pitying, or we worked so hard, a lot of self-congratulation about
yep.
how difficult this was, and attempts to get sympathy or communicate to people. What a fine job we did as a classist. I mm-hmm. guess that's the way to, this doesn't say it quite exactly, but
the tone's really uneven. It's a strange mix of self adulatory and whining.
Yeah. Self aggrandizing, is that it?
Yeah. Self aggrandizing is, you know, trying to make yourself big, but self adulatory is self praising, right? So
mm-hmm.
not quite the same. But yeah, there's both of those, and then yeah, just flat out whining.
Mm-hmm.
self-pity, and yeah, it's not very honorable or big.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go through with a red pen and just circle and notice in how many paragraphs mention is made of their frustration. frustration and their pain and their difficulty and how arduous and how much they put up with and how much they dealt with and how they went the extra mile and they bent over backwards and they couldn't have worked any harder and it was so painful and it was so wearying and that, right?
Yeah, you'd have thought their futures were hanging in the balance.
Yeah.
Their lives were
run over. In addition to that, exhausted budgets and massive assistances and stretching our finances to the limit and emptying the bank account of the classes and blah, 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 blah.
Shameful. Shameful and unmanly.
But you can't have the congregation wondering if you did the right thing, so you better paint the picture.
Yeah.
So are we done, or did you want a summary statement?
Well, I was going to say he's a bit roundabout in covering their butts a few times, but he does at the same time cover a lot of bases in 2.5 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And think about what we might talk about next time.
And with that, we'll wrap up this episode of Verivox that closes our discussion of the letter to the congregation from the quote-unquote council from almost 4 years ago now. Those of you who managed to listen all the way to the end obviously heard in the last 15, 20 minutes the height of bizarre that these people's actions and behavior sometimes reached, especially with that tentative open house scheduling. I want to thank Pastor Simon Templar again for his time, for joining me on this edition, and thank you all for listening. I invite myself and all those listening to reflect on our own conduct in our own churches, because as Simon and I observed, it is probably much easier than we realize to fall into these sorts of traps, especially of insensitivity, obliviousness, especially insensitivity to the Spirit in our conduct, and that this sort of experience should want us not only to seek justice for ourselves or for others, but to beware of falling into these sorts of sins ourselves, because no doubt when you're in the midst of it and you're guilty, it's very hard to see it. So I encourage and exhort all of us to be aware and be sensitive to the Spirit, ask for discernment when analyzing others' conduct and our own, and be asking the Holy Spirit to show us where our own weaknesses and insensitivities may be. But on a more positive note, thank you all again for listening. Hope you will enjoy the coming festive season, as I doubt we'll get in another Verivox before the first of the year, but we'll see what can be done. Meantime, yes, thank you again. God bless, and remember our motto, Iusque Fasque.